Welcome back, the learner. So glad you're joining us today.
Yeah, we've got a really great topic lined up for
We
you.
really do, because, when you think of Saudi Arabia, you probably think of, well, one thing,
Right.
oil.
Right. I mean, petroleum has been the whole story there for decades.
Exactly. But right now, there is this massive, just complete economic pivot happening, like right in front of our eyes.
It's wild. It is a profound structural shift away from that legacy energy dependency.
Which brings us to the mission for today's deep dive. We are looking through some really eye-opening excerpts from a report. It's titled Hospitality Investment in Vision 2030, Saudi Arabia's Hotel Market.
And our goal here for you today is to explore exactly how and, why an entire nation is basically building a massive tourism economy from the ground up.
Yeah, and we want to figure out if deploying capital into this nascent hotel landscape is actually a viable play. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, let's do it. Because to really understand this, we have to look at the foundation. This isn't just about, building a few nice resorts.
Right.
It's a foundational shift aligned with Saudi Vision 2030 to just pry the economy open to the globe and make hospitality a massive economic pillar.
So before we get into the weeds of how to actually invest, we need to understand what is being built. Like, why does the demand even exist?
Right, the macro shift. So
Brilliant.
to understand the demand, you really have to look at how they are engineering two just vastly different pillars of tourism.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first pillar is what I'd call the futuristic moonshots. The source material talks about these mega projects, things like Niamey, Umm Al-Law, and the Red Sea Project.
Oh yeah, these are the ones always like dominating the architectural headlines.
They are. But the thing is, these are not just luxury resorts. They are entirely new, sovereign-backed cities designed to basically conjure an ultra-luxury market right out of the desert.
Wait, literally out of nowhere.
Literally out of the desert. The mandate is to redefine innovation and sustainability to attract millions of these high-spending global visitors, people who would normally go to, like, the Maldives or Monaco.
Wow. Okay. So that represents just a colossal upfront capital gamble. It's highly speculative.
Extremely speculative.
But then you have the second pillar, which is basically the complete opposite of that.
Yes, it is the absolute historical bedrock of the region. Religious tourism.
Centered in Mecca and Medina, right?
Exactly. And the report notes that those two cities alone welcome over 10 million religious pilgrims every single year.
10 million. That is staggering.
It is. And it's year-round, incredibly stable demand.
It seems like the ultimate barbell investment strategy.
Totally.
Like on one end of the barbell, you have the hyper-futuristic, ultra-luxury gambles like Neomem. Huge capital risk. But on the other end, you have this completely insulated, historically proven demand for just massive capacity lodging for all these pilgrims.
Spot on. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that diversity in the risk profile is exactly why the hospitality sector is gaining so much traction over, say, other emerging sectors in the kingdom.
Like fintech or logistics, which are also growing, right?
Right. But hospitality has this barbell. The bedrock religious tourism provides the stability that basically subsidizes the risk of the luxury moonshots.
Makes sense. But I mean, a vision of that scale requires just an oceanic amount of capital.
Yeah.
And historically, getting foreign money into the region was, well, it was incredibly difficult.
It was a nightmare. The old system essentially mandated that if you were a foreign entity, you had to have a local Saudi partner.
And they had to own a significant chunk of the business.
Exactly, which is a huge friction point for outside investors.
So, what has actually changed to let outsiders in? Because grand visions are great, but if the money can't flow.
Right, nothing gets built. Well, they slashed the red tape. Foreigners can now own 100% of a hospitality business without needing any local partner.
Wait, zero local partnership required.
Zero. They removed the biggest historical hurdle. You have total autonomy over your asset now.
Okay, but I have to push back a little on that. Total ownership on paper is great. But practically speaking, operating a massive hotel in a completely unfamiliar regulatory environment, that sounds like a huge operational risk.
It is, and the government knows that, which is why the Ministry of Investment didn't just stop at ownership. They are throwing serious incentives at investors.
Like what?
We're talking massive VAT exemptions for construction, fast-track licensing, dedicated visa support for your foreign management staff.
Oh, wow. So they are actively greasing the wheels.
Totally. They are even waiving licensing fees entirely in certain strategic zones.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because the source material introduces this totally different avenue for capital. Digital access.
Yeah, the real estate crowdfunding.
Exactly. Wait, so I can literally sit in my living room, put on a VR headset to do due diligence on some desert retreat development site, and invest my capital without ever stepping foot in the country.
I know it sounds like a recipe for a real estate bubble, but yes, you can.
But how? Who guarantees the developer actually builds the thing?
This is where the regulatory framework comes in. The Capital Market Authority, the CMA, now regulates these real estate crowdfunding platforms.
Like the SEC in the U.S.
Precisely like the SEC. They enforce rigorous due diligence and project milestones before anyone can list a project, like, say, a Riyadh service department.
Okay, so it's highly transparent.
Very. It's totally revolutionizing how global retail investors can access the market.
So the barriers to entry have been slashed. The capital can flow freely.
Yes.
But money alone doesn't guarantee success. We talked about the operational friction, and you can't just, like, copy-paste a Western hotel model into the kingdom, right?
Absolutely not. The blueprint for success there relies completely on localization. You have to adapt to the culture.
Give me some examples of that from the text.
Well, physical and operational norms. Your property must feature gender-segregated facilities where appropriate. Your restaurants must be strictly halal certified.
Which changes your entire supply chain.
Exactly. And the architecture itself needs to be prayer-friendly.
It's like trying to open a world-class surf shop in the mountains if you don't read the room. Like, yeah. If you don't weave your hotel into the local cultural fabric, your pristine new building is just going to sit empty.
That is a perfect analogy. And you have to weave it into the local workforce, too.
Oh, right. The government quotas?
Yeah, they mandate strict quotas for hiring Saudi nationals. You have to invest in local workforce development early on. It's crucial for compliance.
And I'd imagine it builds a lot of goodwill, too.
It does. What's fascinating here is that embracing these local traditions isn't just about avoiding fines. The source explicitly notes it leads to much greater community support and guest satisfaction.
Which goes straight to the bottom line.
Exactly. Oh, and you can't forget sustainability in tech.
Right. The report mentioned projects like the Red Sea having wild environmental standards.
Yeah, we're talking mandatory solar panels.
Yeah.
Comprehensive water recycling, green materials. And on the tech side, AI concierges and seamless app check-ins are vital for operational efficiency.
Because they're building from a blank slate, so they aren't bogged down by 30-year-old hotel software.
Spot on. They're leapfrogging the legacy systems.
Okay, so we know the rules of the game now. We know how to operate. But let's look at the map. Where exactly do you put your money for maximum returns?
Well, you have to match the asset to the geography. Let's start with the business hubs, Riyadh and Jeddah.
What's the play there?
In Riyadh, there is massive demand for extended stay service departments.
For all the expats coming in for Vision 2030 projects.
Exactly. They need kitchens, workspaces, that sort of thing. And in Jeddah, you're looking at mixed-use developments because it acts as the upgraded gateway to both the Red Sea and Makkah.
Okay, what about moving away from the cities? The report mentions Alula a lot.
Alula is the rising star of cultural tourism. It's perfect for these low-impact boutique hotels and desert retreats.
So culturally immersive experiences.
Yes, and because the room count is low, you get much higher margins per room.
Makes sense. And then there's the Asir region, which kind of bucks the desert stereotype, right?
Yeah, it's mountainous. It has a cool climate. It attracts domestic tourists and international adventurers. So that area is ripe for eco-lodges.
Wow, the diversity is crazy.
There's one more thing, a sort of bonus note mentioned in the text. The premium residency program.
Oh, right. I wanted to ask about this. How does that work?
Basically, if you invest significant capital-like funding, a major hospitality project, the government grants you long-term visas and business rights.
So you get residency just for investing?
Yes. It has immense value for heavy hitters looking to really establish a foothold.
So what does this all mean? If I'm listening to this and I have, say, a really low-risk appetite and just want steady cash flow versus a high-risk long-term outlook, where am I looking?
This raises an important question about strategy. If you want reliable year-round cash flow, you point your capital directly to Makkah and Medina.
Because of the pilgrims.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you have a high risk tolerance and want an early entry into an ultra-luxury long-term play, you're looking at NEOM and the Red Sea.
It's just incredible to see all these threads coming together.
It really is.
And for you listening, to just quickly recap, Saudi Arabia isn't just building a few hotels. They're literally constructing an entire tourism ecosystem from scratch.
Yeah, from the 100% foreign ownership to the digital crowdfunding to the incredibly diverse map of opportunities.
It's all just hyper-aligned with Vision 2030. And honestly, why this matters to you, the listener, is that even if you aren't ready to drop millions of dollars into a desert eco-resort today...
Though if you are, good for you.
Ha, right. But even if you aren't, understanding how an entire nation completely overhauls its economic identity like this, it is a masterclass in global economics and strategy.
It absolutely is. And I want to leave you with one final thought to sort of mull over.
Yeah, let's hear it.
The source details all this massive infrastructure, right? Mm. The legal reforms, the diverse markets being built to attract millions.
Right.
But if an entire nation can successfully manufacture a global tourism identity from scratch in just a few short years, what does that mean for the traditional legacy tourist capitals of the world?
Oh, wow. Like Paris or Rome?
Exactly. Will the center of gravity for global travel permanently shift to the Middle East? It's something the legacy markets really need to think about.
That is a wild thought to end on. Really makes you wonder what travel looks like 10 years from now.
Mm.
Well, that's all for today's deep dive. Thanks for listening and keep learning.